Hi everyone, my name is Katrin and I'm super optimistic about ourselves using our own data in Europe and being quite independent with that resource.
And my name is Tobias and I'm optimistic about technology in principle, that it will continue to improve our lives, bring people out of poverty and all the good things. My glass is half full.
The Optimist. Conversations with leaders and industries shaping Europe's future. Exploring the ideas and innovations driving progress across the continent.
Welcome to The Optimist, brought to you by Tech by Handelsblatt. I'm Felix Zeltner, your host and your guide on this journey all across Europe to the leaders, the people that shape our future today. And I have to tell you, today is an episode that if you would have asked me before, I would have said, no chance. I cannot explain to you what this is all about. We're talking about agentic AI. And if you would have asked me, come on, Felix, can you explain me what that is? Or should I ask ChatGPT? I would have recommended to do the latter. I had no understanding of what this next era of AI is all about. Is this an avatar that is looking at us from our screens? Is this somebody in your, you know, in your chat messages who is looking after you? Is this a virtual colleague somewhere out there? I just had no idea, no understanding. And thanks to our guests today, this is the first podcast with two guests, by the way, who both work for the same organization and have over half a million colleagues around the world. Thanks to our guests today, you will leave with a better understanding what we are up to in this new era of agentic AI. Katrin Schwan is the lead data and AI for Germany, Austria, and Switzerland at Accenture. And her colleague Tobias Regenfuß is the technology lead for Germany, Austria, and Switzerland at Accenture. Both are high up in the ranks. Both are the managing directors. And both have responsibility for a lot of human and a lot of AI colleagues out there that they're building together. So you're in for a ride, and I'm so happy they took the time to take us on this journey into agentic AI. Here are Katrin and Tobias. Welcome. Katrin, Tobias, so great to have you on The Optimist. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too, Felix.
Very good to see you. Thank you, Felix. Good to be here.
Katrin, how are you doing?
As said, I'm doing really well. I just returned from the LogiMAT yesterday, and the use of data and the importance of it for our industry and for our future well-being is massive. So I can see all these good uses we can put the data to, and I see all the people that thrive on really putting it to good use. So very optimistic here.
LogiMAT, big trade show that you were just attending. Tobias, where are you coming from right now?
I'm coming out of a customer meeting, cannot speak much more about it, but we were talking about our technology vision in Accenture and how AI is going to really change enterprises and what is important for that, and also the topic of trust, which we might talk a bit more about later as well here.
Interesting. Okay. Well, this is the first time The Optimist hosts two guests, and we are not in the same room together. We are virtually connected. And you are where, Katrin? Where are you actually joining us from?
I'm joining you from my home in Munich, where I spent the day in my home office, also possible through technology. Thank you, Tobias, and everyone else who makes this happen.
And you, Tobias?
Same here, at home in Germany today in my home office, because we said we need good microphones, and that's what I have at home. So I'm not in the office today, same as Katrin.
You both upgraded yourselves for this podcast. I really appreciate it. It's so great to have you both. And just for people to understand, because now we, of course, know that you both work at Accenture, but Accenture is a huge firm with hundreds of thousands of people all across the world. How do you two work together on a daily basis? Katrin, I'm going to ask this to you first.
So this is actually a pretty good example today on how we work together. So we see each other virtually, even though we are based in the same office. And we sometimes meet each other at the client, as well as also in project team meetings. So it's quite a mixed, let's say, interaction that we have.
Tobias, how would you describe the way you work together or learn from each other?
So, I mean, Katrin is, she said she's leading data and AI overall. So she helps our customers to understand opportunities, identify opportunities, what they can do from their data through AI across all their different types of businesses. Mm-hmm. I'm going with my team, going deep on building technology solutions that bring this to life. Is it data and AI? Is it cloud? Is it SAP? So this is where we are meeting. I'm running the team that is coming with the deep technology experiences and technology expertise. And Katrin brings the whole data depth and understanding of how AI can transform industries and businesses.
It's funny to me to hear that. I just attended South by Southwest, the world's largest innovation and tech festival. And when I listen to you, you almost sound like you work for a tech company.
And we are.
Because your work has become so digital.
Yes, I think that this is absolutely true. I think today, technology is at the core of driving competitiveness for companies. And that is also what we do in Accenture. And what we've always did, we are at the core a company that helps customers to adopt technology with across all, like we work in 19 industries, we cover all the different business processes. But it's not only building systems, it's also advising clients and advising customers about where's the opportunity, working with them on their strategy. But today, every strategy is a technology strategy, and you have to drive this then forward from strategy to a concept, to an architecture, to a configuration, and something you can put into production and run.
You can imagine, if I may add, it's like we privately use our smartphones, right? For 20 years before, we not really needed or had these devices always on hand, at least most of us didn't. And now it became part of our lives. In fact, some might say that it became a too big part of our lives, but that's sort of comparable to what's happening in technology and data today in the enterprise business, because effectively there is pretty much nothing without technology or data being involved. And this is where we too also work super closely together. And so we are very grateful to be able to do this podcast for you together today.
Mm-hmm. Every company is sort of a tech company at this point. And AI as a topic has been a thread through these first episodes of The Optimist. And I sometimes feel like it's like talking about the internet in the late 90s. It's just the new internet and it's called AI. And some people, and I saw a funny poster at South by Southwest said, are we already AI obese? Mm. Which is, I think, speaking to this topic of all of us feel like we have so much to learn and so much information and news to process around this topic every day that we almost feel like overweight sometimes, and we want to get it off. We want to start running and, you know, and lose some weight again. But I want to ask you in that context, in this crazy pace that we live in, can you give me an example of something that you only recently learned about AI, about the topic that has become a part of your both of your job titles? Maybe, Tobias, you want to go first.
About AI, I think what surprised me, the Edelman report came out very recently, who was looking at trust across the globe and how people are trusting companies, are trusting brands, are trusting governments, very different aspects. And one of the reports was also, or the charts I saw was about trust in AI. And there's such a big difference about, like, geographically. Mm-hmm. If you ask people on the street in China and in India, do you trust in AI? Around 70% of the adult population would say yes. And in Europe and in the US, it's only around 30%. So there's a big difference between how people, population, but that are also workers, that are employees in companies, that are consumers in the different geographies are trusting AI. And that's, of course, super important when you think about adoption in the future. How quickly will societies be able to adopt this and also drive competitive advantage through this? And that's, I found, a very interesting insight and also a bit of a wake-up call to think about, okay, how do we overcome that bridge in Europe?
That's quite a lack of trust. I mean, what would you say? Are you judging this? Would you say not trusting like the Europeans do or trusting like the people in the global south maybe do? Is there one that is better than the other?
No, I think it's different. And there are reasons for this. For example, our attitude towards privacy in Europe is very different to the one to privacy in China. Completely different idea of how important it is to keep your data, control of your own data and of your own digital self. So I don't think it's better or worse. It's just different, but it points to, I think, potentially very different speeds in adopting this technology and driving competitiveness of companies and of industries.
So the Edelman report gave you a sort of, so you just learned basically that in my part of the world where I live, it might take a lot longer than in some other parts where Accenture, my company, is actually working. And we have to, it's kind of like a highway, but we're driving at very, very different speeds.
Yes.
And maybe we don't even know which exit some of us might be taking on that highway. Katrin, what is something that you recently learned about AI that stuck with you or that you're maybe still processing that you want to share?
Yeah. It's actually very recently. Just this morning, it was like sort of like a penny dropping for me how similar AI agent frameworks are to how we humans behave in teams. And we discussed, in fact, during a press conference, we actually discussed, you know, agentic with regards to how this actually plays out in terms of different agents interacting with one another. And to come to the trust thing, how important it is to monitor that interaction, which is possible for us humans because it is natural language that is being used. And the way that we set up these agentic frameworks with orchestrator agents that act like project managers, with super agents that act like workstream managers, and then with utility agents that act like specialists, and how they interplay with humans, that was something where that just struck me like, well, this is really almost like an org chart that we, you know, use in our operating models. And that's to me also a lot about, you know, how could this look in the future? And what does this mean also for us as humans with regards to how we interact with AI on a day-to-day basis in an enterprise?
Okay. Katrin, I have to say what you just said is almost like a new language to me that I still have to learn. So you talked about super agents, organizational agents, and what was the third category?
Utility agents.
Utility agents. So, and I'm not alone on this, I can promise you, because I was just at this tech conference and there was a speaker who asked the room, and these are people that are technologists, who asked the room, who has understood AI agents? And there were about 1,000 people in this room, and I think there went like maybe 100 hands went up. And I looked around like, I'm not alone in not understanding what AI agents are. And of course, you could probably write a book about this, but maybe what would be helpful for our listeners is, can you paint us a picture? Can you give us one example of how AI agents actually work for us, with us, like one specific application?
So one of the, I think, most used agents is a policy agent. So that is like a team member, you can imagine, who is super, super apt on all kinds of policies that one has to watch out for. You know, you can even take the EU AI Act compliance or something like this, where you have a lot of documentation to have ready at your fingertips to apply to potential decisions that you are taking. And an AI agent, a utility agent, would be specialized in representing these policies in a team setup. So like you have an expert on the EU AI Act policies, the very detail of the language, you would be having this agent, so an artificial intelligence representing this in a team. Different to a co-pilot, a co-pilot reacts to what a human gives them to crunch on. An AI agent is actively pursuing and offering, so to say, advice, pursuing decisions and interacting. And that's quite a difference to the co-pilots that we are used to. So just consider an agent like an expert you would be having in a team to solve a complex problem together.
Wow. So basically on this podcast, there could be an additional window or in your next Zoom or Teams call, and that would, you would see a raised hand go up in the middle of your meeting. And then an AI voice would say, well, given the latest EU regulation, what you're discussing here, I would suggest that you look into paragraph 15B, because that touches on exactly what you're discussing, and make sure that you don't XYZ. Is that how this would play out?
Yeah, that could exactly be how it plays out. Or you could have like somebody who is a, you know, a librarian. In fact, we actually have an agent pre-programmed that is a librarian. So somebody who is actually acting like you would be having a librarian pulling out specific knowledge on a certain topic. It doesn't have to be the EUAI Act. It can be anything. Like, for instance, in pharma research, somebody who is familiar with the latest research results from all over the world, you know, where you would be having somebody like this as an expert in the team, providing that latest research insight to the entire team.
But where does this expert sit? I mean, you just said the co-pilot is kind of like this chat window and you're like, hey, I want to talk to you. And then the AI, the language model becomes active. But is this a agent, a colleague that just reaches out to you occasionally and says, hey, Felix, it's almost 5 p.m., but, you know, let me get to you with this very important message, and then sends me two pages of links and paragraphs that I need to read to because the agent just realized that I was about to make a mistake. Like, how is it going to play out in my day-to-day work environment where I have a sort of like an artificial colleague that I'm not asking something, but that will actively reach out to me if I understand that right?
So I also mentioned the super agents, so to call. Uh-huh. And the super agents are like workstream managers, if you will. So to have somebody actively call out to you, there has to be some sort of obviously time frame where, you know, the agent knows, oh, and, you know, I need to be coming forth with what I have to say within this time. Otherwise, the specialist doesn't really know, you know, when does it really fit in. So the super agent would then orchestrate and say, you know, Felix needs this knowledge by tonight. So if you have anything to say, you have researched this, please do step forward within the time frame. So this is then how you would be approached by the agent. And it's really, it's a natural language. So it can even have the form of a chat that, you know, is open and the agent is interacting with you within that chat.
Fascinating.
And the agents can even, if that's more pleasant, have, let's say, an avatar appearance, which, you know, might make the interaction for us humans a little bit more, let's say, familiar.
And just to understand, Tobias, you are already rolling this out. This is not some science fiction here. This is happening 2025.
It is happening, absolutely. I mean, the agentic concept came up last year. Customers started to embrace it. I think many are still in the conceptual space, but the first cases are rolling out. And Katrin gave some examples. I think another one would be in software engineering, where we have that concept quite worked out. You have, like in software engineering, you have different roles. You have typically a product owner that owns a certain software product. You have someone that writes architectural documentation, someone that writes the design, someone that codes, and a quality assurance a person. And all these roles you can build as agents as well that are interacting with, in this case, probably the orchestrator agent would be the product owner that gets a requirement from the user and says, okay, I need to build this into my software system, and then directs different agents to develop the use cases, to validate them with the users, to build the designs, the architecture, the code. I mean, everybody talks about code assistance like GitHub Copilot. I mean, this, I think people have heard about it. That's just a piece in an agentic workflow that would develop a end-to-end kind of system. Mm-hmm. But another agentic topic that I found quite interesting is coming from the defense space. And I mean, we would have probably not spoken about defense a few months ago, but now it's on everybody's mind.
It is.
And here, also here, AI and agentic can be a real game changer. Something that we developed with our colleagues for the military is the following use case. You want to create and build a what was called a forward operational base in the landscape, somewhere on the battleground. So it's a military station. You need to bring a certain number of people there, vehicles, and so on. And what the use case is, you use drone images from the terrain, and then you give this to an agentic system, and you give it with the prompt to say, okay, how many people do I want to have in that forward operational base? What sort of vehicles? What sort of NATO protection class should this thing have? Then the agent goes away, looks at the image, goes to the SAP system to see, hey, what sort of stock do we actually have? What kind of tents? What type of equipment? And then within a minute, builds a layout of a graphical 3D model in the landscape, plotted on top of the drone image, and shows you, okay, this could be the sketch of how this forward operational base should be looking like. And then you can, through further prompts, change it until you're happy with it. And then somebody goes, whatever, with a virtual headset over the terrain and marks where the tents should be placed and where the vehicles should be parked.
Wow.
And that's also an agentic workflow, quite sophisticated. And I mean, I think it brings home the point of how the future will look like, and also how AI will also transform the defense space.
I mean, you're just bringing a topic up that I think is so underrated, under-narrated, under-reported, and is going to grow massively. And I assume that for Accenture, this is a growing space as well. I just also heard that there is a lot of conversation about 3D printing in defense that happens on site, so that the supply chains mm-hmm. will change entirely and people will be able to create and manufacture whatever they need while they're basically out on the field. Is that also something where AI agents would come into play?
I mean, there was one case which is just, I think, showing how generative AI in principle can like really change the game completely. We were like preparing for a meeting with a military equipment a company in Europe, and our colleagues from our data AI team just took a publicly available 3D drawing of all the different parts of the tank, like an explosion drawing, which shows all the different pieces of a tank. And then we just fed it into a large language model and said, which of these components can be 3D printed? And then the system came back and said, yes, so here's my list of different components, judging from this drawing, that you can 3D print on the battlefield. So I think that's mind-blowing compared to how you would in the past have approached this. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a good example of how disruptive this technology can be if you really think outside of the box what you might be able to do in the future and how AI can help you to rethink your supply chain.
Katrin, I just cut you off.
No, I wanted to emphasize, and this is another example that underlines this, how important the data becomes now. Because the more the agentic frameworks come in and the agents act on what we feed them as data, the more emphasis is on that data being right all the time, having a consistent quality and being trustworthy and trustful. And like you said, Tobias, you know, when we are relying on data to paint a battleground and take these decisions, the data has to be absolutely bulletproof in a figure of speaking, obviously. So this is a really big focus area for us as of now, because to really deploy agentic frameworks at scale, the data needs to be in a much better condition across the board than we currently find it. I'm very positive, as I said, this is the Optimist podcast, so I'm super positive we can do it because it's in our hands, but we have to act now.
But that to me, Tobias, sounds like a mission impossible to stay here in the defense language. I mean, create better data than we have now. Like, is there an example you can give on how you are improving data that then makes the agents better? I can't even imagine how that works.
I mean, there's a lot of groundwork you have to do within the companies to identify your most reliable data sources and install, I think, procedures, responsibilities from an organizational perspective, but then also use tools to increase your data quality. But I would also pass this over to Katrin, as this is her daily job to help customers to set this up.
Yeah, and again, here AI helps us because we have now other means at our disposal. Like, for instance, in computer vision, we obviously have a ton of data when you look at videos and images, and there's plenty of these now compared to like 20, 30 years ago in digital form. The deployment and exploitation of this sort of data is something where artificial intelligence also helps us. And here, human and machine work side by side for better training data, for more accurate quality assurance, and doing that at scale requires artificial intelligence as well.
Interesting. So you're saying the fact that cameras have become ubiquitous and that video is becoming more and more of a source for data around the world will also help making data better. Did I understand that correctly?
Exactly. And it's also quite an NVIDIA, for instance, uses for its Omniverse simulations of, you know, 3D production systems and production facilities, the OpenUSD, the Open Data Standard. That's something that we can also achieve with, deploying these images and the videos, because that's a pretty unified format, so to say. Everybody has that. You have it on the iPhones, you have it on cameras, on everything. So if you actually, come to deploying such a standard, that's also helping us to make this data usable across the board, rather than having specific data standards that are linked to specific technologies, which kind of promote silos when you think of the usage, which will go across quite a bit now.
I have another question for you on the AI agents that I just was thrown into. So when we all look at our messaging behavior every day, we might use WhatsApp or iMessages or SMS or Facebook Messenger and all these tools that promise us some sort of encryption and privacy, but that are reading a lot of our metadata, where we are, who we're talking to, when we're talking, maybe not what we're saying, but what kind of content we're exchanging. And then there's other platforms, and I'm mentioning just one, Signal, which promise full encryption. So no data gets shared anywhere. Not where you are, not who you're talking to, not even who you are, and of course not the content you're sending around. So the tools that I mentioned first, owned by maybe Meta or Apple or Google, they will be able to transform all that data into agentic systems. The one that give us complete privacy won't, because they don't have any data on us. So do you think that even though these companies, and we Europeans like them, who promise us a lot of privacy, are there for us and they're vouching for us, do you think they will lose in the end because they just can never build AI agents in the first place? Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, that's actually a pretty difficult thing. It comes kind of back to us as a consumers and also users of these applications. I mean, everybody of us should be aware of the terms and conditions that these companies put out. And they are, in fact, as you rightly say, very different.
So we have to read the terms and conditions whenever we sign up to a new app, as you know.
Whatever we sign up to, we have to read through, okay, this is the conditions that you sign up to when you're using our services. And most of these services are free, which means the companies that provide these services have to earn their living in some way or shape. Now, some do this through advertising, for instance, and advertising is most effective if it's well targeted, which means that these companies exploit the information that they obtain from the users for this purpose, which in fact might actually be in the interest of users, because the more you target, the more money you make, the less ads you actually have to show. Mm-hmm. So you can already see how this is a double-edged sword, this whole discussion, because yes, if I completely insist on my privacy, that also means that the opposite does not learn anything about me. Like you go into a store and you say, I would like to have... I would like to purchase a sports item, but I'm not going to tell you what sports I play. I'm not going to tell you what gender I'm in. I'm not going to tell you how much money I have.
Yeah.
Now, how good is that recommendation going to be for you then? So it's a give and take, and we have to educate ourselves in terms of, okay, what's okay for us to share in return of getting very targeted, fitting offers or services mm-hmm. from whomever I'm sharing with. That's a choice we all have to make.
Okay. Tobias, do you have an opinion on this?
Yeah, I mean, we have to be, of course, very mindful when we build these agentic systems in the future and what we allow them to do. I think it will expand this kind of policy management that you have today on your iPhone, on your Android phone already. What you say, what do I allow certain applications to do? I think today this is in place already. I think it's working pretty well. I think many consumers are not paying too much attention of what they are allowing. I mean, it's quite interesting. You download a compass application and it wants access to your address book, and you think like, hey, what's going on, right? And why does it want to make calls or send messages? Uh-huh. I just want a compass. I just want to know where north, south, west, and east are. So, and that will, I think, become even more important in the future, that we as consumers also understand what we are allowing these systems to do. Of course, like your Signal might be as super reliable and protecting your data super well, super safe. But if you allow an agent, of course, to read it and send it to wherever, the whole chain of trust is broken. Mm-hmm. So we have to be careful as consumers. And I think the alerting system on the phones might have to evolve to prevent us from something we might not want.
You know what I would love to have as an AI agent? An AI agent that reads all the terms and conditions of all the apps and all the software that I own, because I never do that.
You might have that in the future.
You can actually build this.
You might perhaps Signal develops an agent that lives on your phone that makes sure that you're not doing anything with the signal flow.
That's absolutely something you can build. And just to come back to the Signal example here, I use Signal, in fact, today, and they actually asked me for a donation. Mm-hmm. And now I also, as a consumer, have to realize these services where others use my data to pay. I obviously have to compensate companies that do not use my data to pay with other means to sustain their services. So that's also something we have to consider in terms of maybe we have to allot a bit of our budget in return for these services and our privacy.
Pay for privacy individually or not pay, but then be aware of the fact that you pay with something else.
True.
Do you both have favorite agents that you're using already? I'm thinking about your daily life and work as leaders. I'm thinking about maybe your families, your hobbies. Is there anything in your lives that you would consider as an AI agent that you're using today that you can talk about? Katrin?
Tobias already got started. Come on.
Oh, yeah, sorry. This is the fun of doing a virtual podcast with two guests. You're never quite sure who has the first answer. But Tobias, back to you.
Yeah, so I'm a big user of Perplexity. It's, I think, really realizing this promise of combining generative AI with the best search. And with the research feature that Perplexity recently launched, I'm even more amazed what it can do and help me in my personal life, but also preparing for customer meetings, for sessions on topics I don't understand well, areas I want to learn more about. So it's my personal component and it's an agentic workflow. I ask it a simple question, like I'm traveling to Athens tomorrow on a private trip. So I asked yesterday evening, okay, so I'm arriving at that time and leaving Sunday evening, what should I be doing? And like it provides me a 5-page detailed schedule of, like I say, like what are my interests, of course, like history, culture, modern art, a bit of good food mixed in, not the trodden path of all the other tourists. And it comes back with a super detailed itinerary and plan and suggestion, which is just mind-blowing. So that's on the personal side. Mm-hmm. Of course, in Accenture, we are also building AI systems that are helping ourselves. We call this Amethyst. This is our core system that every Accenture person has access to access our own like cognitive digital brain of all the knowledge we have in Accenture. So to find knowledge assets, to find reference documents of example projects where I might be looking for, but also to check my vacation balance. And like new features are being added to this every day. So it's quite useful in the professional life.
So fascinating. As somebody who used to be a writer for various publications, among them travel publications, I was just thinking with some nostalgia back to the days where, you know, travel editors would branch out and then come back with maps and huge reports and then print them into books that then people would buy for their trips to Athens. It sounds a little bit like, Tobias, those times are gone.
Yeah, this industry is definitely being disrupted. If you in particular imagine then the agent asking you, okay, shall I book any of the restaurants I'm suggesting, or
there you go,
organize you a museum ticket or access to the Acropolis or the flight, the hotel, whatever you can. Then it gets really agentic that you have then different mm-hmm. specialists, as Katrin explained, that are taking on different roles in making your life even easier. But yes, the industry is being transformed, but there will be new travel agencies arising that are working with this technology and make something even more cool out of it.
Katrin, from Tobias's AI-fueled trip to Athens to you, what is an AI agent that you use every day?
So I'm actually more into discovering how big the role of the underlying data assets are with regards to the quality of the answers I'm getting. So I'm experimenting on similar questions with different applications that we use internally. And I actually love the GenAI app space that we built with our own team that is very specific to data and AI questions and answers with regards to the vast documentation that we have at hand here. And that is obviously a proprietary knowledge of Accenture. So not available to Perplexity, at least I hope not. And that's something where I'm testing, okay, how good is this versus the Copilot that we actually also use versus the Amethyst app that we have for general Accenture. And to me, that's really fascinating. And I have to say that the data makes a hell of a lot of difference in the quality of the answers you're getting. That's kind of where I'm also seeing to be very optimistic with regards to, you know, what are we doing in Europe versus like America and Asia, that we are now at the next level of truly making this unique to ourselves with the data that we are applying to this new technology and that we are feeding it with.
So even though Tobias in the beginning gave us this image of the highway where everybody's driving at different speeds and there's people driving at much higher speeds than Europe at the moment when it comes to AI adoption, you're making a strong case for Europe here, saying that we might not be the fastest, but somehow, well, it brings us back to cars, Germany's favorite topic, the car that we're sitting in might be a bit better. Is that a good metaphor?
Yeah, maybe it's the car that has the least resistance to, you know, the air pressure when you go faster. Maybe it's that way that you say, you know, I can do a lot more with less. That is what the data enables us to do. So, and this is also, you know, when we're talking about absolutely mind-blowing inventions like Perplexity, I mean, the CO2 footprint of using these sorts of services is still, to say, to be optimized. And this is where I see this also strongly coming in as a way to be much more economical on how we are using our energy and our resources when we actually want to use these absolutely pristine services. I completely agree with you, Tobias. It's mind-blowing. And I think we can, you know, even make it more effective with regards to the resource usage that we actually, you know, have coming with these sorts of questions.
We have a couple of more minutes, and I just wanted to turn into the role of a worried Accenture employee at the moment. Your company has had tremendous growth over the past years. Just when you ask any search engine out there, the numbers are staggering. I think you're somewhere between 700,000 and 800,000 humans that are working under the Accenture umbrella, which is for me even hard to even imagine, across more than 100 countries. So me, the worried Accenture employee, is coming to you and saying, hey, I'm Felix, and I know your job titles, and I'm really worried because I'm used to really thinking for myself, reading reports, crunching data, taking time for scientific papers, putting out surveys, and processing that with my own brain, and then really delivering great service to our customers. I'm worried that what you're doing is transforming into our organization into basically a giant pool of AI agents, where then in the end, there will just be one office left with a few people and millions of agents working around the world. What do you tell me to make me feel a little more optimistic?
I think you are exactly, with that kind of mindset, you are exactly fit for the future. If you are genuinely interested, if you are curious, if you love data, if you love to deeper, you are the person that will have a big role also in the future. I mean, we will see big shifts in the job market. Let's not be mistaken, but let's also not be mistaken. This will not come overnight. But over time, the work will change. And so that means the worker needs to change, because we will need new skills, new ways of working. Things will become more important, like tech savviness, understanding data, understanding how to work with technology and use it. But also data savviness across the organization will be a key topic. And when the worker changes, also the workforce will need to change. So, and that change will be Also often for the better, because I'm very, like, this is the Optimist podcast. I'm optimistic because, like, people get rid of a lot of boring work that they don't like, routine. We can focus more on the human side. We can focus on the customer, on the individual, like, social interactions, and really the personal interactions, the personal touch will be much more, I think, important and a differentiator going forward. So, and I think a lot of new jobs will also be created that we have no idea about, as every time a new technology was coming. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, I mean, we have demographic change in many countries, from Germany to Japan, where this technology can also help to actually make this and survive this demographic change even and make it a positive thing.
Tobias, do you have an example for a new job that we don't have yet that will be very much present in the age of agentic AI? Is there a job description you have already been putting
together?
So, for
example, I think like a super agent orchestrator, somebody that looks at like what all the agents are doing, right, and keeping them under control. Could be very much, I mean, the jobs, I think, in general will change from creating many things from reviewing and quality assuring AI output and working with AI output to make it better. I think that will be a change, and it's, I think, a very demanding change for us humans. Mm-hmm. Let's not be mistaken. It's super hard to read something that was created by someone else. Anybody who has ever reviewed a document that someone else has created,
oh, yes,
knows how tough this life is. And if your job all day is to look at code that was written by agents or documents or insurance claims policy response or something like this, mm-hmm. These jobs will be, like, I think it will go in that direction. It will be, I think, demanding for us. I'm also not sure if this will be a 40 hours per week job,
okay,
all the time, because it might simply be too demanding on us. So we might have to mix something else into the job, something more social, personal, I don't know. Katrin, perhaps you have some other examples, but I think this is where we are heading.
I think it's exactly how you say, Tobias, the social and personal will play an ever more large role, because effectively what we have been super good at as humans is the siloing of things. We chop stuff into pieces and then we work through it step by step. That is going to be going away. So what I think is going to happen is there's a lot more blending of technology, of data usage, of human interaction, change management. That's all going to be happening intermixed as the situation requires. We can already see it with clients. A lot more empathy is needed. A lot more listening is needed. Mm-hmm. A lot less, you know, I get that PowerPoint ready in time. I get this printed out. All of that is going away. That's going to be absolutely mitigated. So the job will be changing massively. I'm sure of it. These other skills, these social skills, will become much more important, along with analytical skills, data literacy skills. So this is going to be broadening a lot more, and it's going to be a lot more complex for the humans. I think the agentic AI is pushing the human to new boundaries of what's possible with the human mind. And that's going to be the challenge. So I also agree, Tobias, I could see, you know, that this 30-hour, 20-hour week, where the output is still massive because we are using the agentic frameworks as tools, the productivity is going to massively increase. I could see that coming.
Fascinating. So you're telling me, the anxious employee of Accenture, A, this company is not going anywhere soon. We're not going to be run by a super AI. We very much will need humans. B, you're good in being thorough. You're good in being a good editor and fact checker. We need that skill. And C, to be a future employee of Accenture, however that firm might look like, you should really become better at working with AI agents, training yourself, and to orchestrate and sort of be these, how did you call it, Tobias? A super orchestrator? I think that's a job title I've never heard before.
I don't know. I just thought making this up, but I think...
A conductor.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, a conductor is a nice picture, perhaps, yes.
And I was wondering, now that we come to the end of our podcast, I mean, you're part of the tech conference by Handelsblatt, that is the presenting organization and event that is debuting in May, that is behind the Optimist. And I'm so excited to get to talk to leaders like you, who have such an amazing outlook for us into the future. And the tech conference has this beautiful claim, Europe's cluster of optimism. And you are a co-initiator of this gathering, co-creating this new community of European leaders that is coming together there. However, I think what we have learned so far this year is, and Andrea Levine, who was the guest on the second episode, said it, well, I thought I had an outlook on 25, and then January happened. So when we just look between now and the end of May, when we will see you in Heilbronn for the tech conference, what do you think? What do you expect to happen in AI? And I'm not asking for a 5 or 10 year outlook. I'm more asking for like 8 weeks, because I think that's what we're down to. I just heard the futurist Amy Webb say for futurists these days, it's more like, I think this might happen this afternoon. Let's build a scenario for that. So I'm trying to push you a little bit on, let's say, a 6 to 8 week scenario. What is next in AI? What should we look out for? What do you recommend to the leaders that you work with every day? What do you expect to happen in AI? Tobias, you wanna start?
So I mean, we talked about agentic. That will, I think it will continue to surprise us. I like the thing of the afternoon. So what might happen this afternoon? It will continue to amaze us. I think agentic, we will see progress. I think the topic of robotic and AI, humanoid robots working with AI will like even in the next 8 weeks become even more prominent. And I think we will see the first LLM trained with more than $1 billion of cost, the first $1 billion training run being released.
Wow. $1 billion training run? What do you mean by that?
So I mean, today, like the largest training runs of companies, I think that was in Google Gemini, that cost around $200 million. And so the cost to train it, infrastructure, data acquisition, all the different steps within that. And the $1 billion model, so where a company has invested $1 billion to just train a single LLM, I think that's around the corner. And my prediction is it will happen before the tech.
Mind-boggling. Katrin, what do you expect to happen in AI between now, the release of this podcast, and the end of May?
What I'm hoping will happen is that we get a joint commitment by politics and our society, by our economic leaders, to promote AI in Europe and to promote what we are unique about, to really also put us in a position where we, as like a global society, can discuss eye to eye on these topics. And I'm sure that we can bring something very unique to the table. Mm-hmm. So I hope that we as a society, not just Germany, but also across Europe, will work on sharpening what we can bring to the table, and that we can also commit to what we will be bringing to the table as one way forward.
Okay. I just changed my mind. I'm actually going to challenge you about the next 5 years. I just learned a question from Ipsos, from the Marketing Research Institute, and we have 2 more minutes, so I'm going to use that with the two of you and ask you this question. What is something you wish you had a trend line on for the next 5 years today?
So what do you mean with trend line exactly, Felix?
What is something you wish you would know how it is going to evolve for the next 5 years, and you wish you knew today how that line of development looks like? So I'm totally pushing you to the brink here into speculative futuring, but I think you're exactly the right guest to do that. Who would like to go first?
I would love to go first. I would love to see a trend line that shows us the correlation between the consumption of data and the value created for all employees of, for me, the German-speaking markets, so Germany, Austria, Switzerland, plus the Swiss that do not just speak German. I would love to see this, and I would love to see it go up, because I think then we are making good use of the resources that we in Europe can control.
Interesting. So just to understand, a trend line that shows how all we just talked about actually creates revenue, creates business, creates opportunities for us humans over the next 5 years. Is that about?
Exactly.
Right.
The productivity increase we dream about, the data assets that we dream about, we will have at our disposal to create value, the ability to turn that into value, into tangible growth, and to sustain or increase our position economically, as well as also as a society in our global ecosphere. I would love to see that trend line.
Tobias?
From my perspective, I mean, the presence is super disrupted in the moment already. Like if you look at social shifts, economical, technological, also military-wise, all of these trend lines would be super interesting to know. I personally would probably mostly love to know the trend line of the evolution of the US foreign policy, to be honest. That would be good to know already and get prepared. Mm-hmm. But if you look into AI, probably the trend line on I talked about trust and how that trust in AI is going to continuously evolve going forward, because we are doing the right interventions and build trustworthy technology, but also build a societal movement and drive the change that people also trust this technology, because you need both.
So trust and US foreign policy, which I think both kind of like goes into the same direction. I just asked a futurist this question. He said, I would love to have a trend line on predictability. I think that shows you a lot about where we are right now.
Yeah.
And I think we spent a lot of this podcast talking about AI agents. I learned so much from you. And I think I'm not the only one who is now thinking a little bit different about this agentic era that we are entering. If I could wish for two human agents to have on my side to go through that era, it would definitely be the two of you. I'm really grateful that you took the time to be here. Tobias is making a little heart over our video. I really mean it. I hope that we can have another conversation on this. And I hope that you are out there and sharing what you know, because I feel like a lot of us are just trying to understand and you are actively working with it. And it's so exciting to know that you're out there and doing this work. Thank you for taking the time, Katrin and Tobias, to be a part of The Optimist. And I guess, see you in Heilbronn.
See you in Heilbronn, Felix. Thanks a lot.
You're in Heilbronn. Thank you so much, Felix, for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Optimist. For more insights and updates about tech, visit us at tech-europe.org. The Optimist is produced by Tech by Handelsblatt. Music by Christian Heinemann. Stay curious.